Dean Borg with River to River on this Monday and this legislative day. And departing just a little bit on this legislative Monday, we are talking not with current legislators, but with those who have, I would say, volumes of experience from past years. Over the next hour, we're going to be talking with several legislators in the first part of this hour, talking with Bill Gluba and with Brent Sechrist. Now, Bill Gluba is a Democrat. He's a former mayor of Davenport. I'm going to say hello, Mayor Gluba. Hello, Senator Gluba. Hello, Supervisor Gluba, because those are all the offices that he's held. Bill, nice to have you here.
Well, thank you, Dean.
He, as I said, former mayor of Davenport, served in the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate between 1971 and 1976. He represented Scott County in the House from 1971 to 72, and then followed by 4 years in the state Senate, later as a Scott County supervisor for a time, and then for four terms as mayor of Davenport. And then Brent Sechrist. He's a Republican, and Brent is on the telephone from his area out in the Council Bluffs area in western Iowa. Hello, Brent.
Hello, Dean and Bill. Good to be with you.
And Brent Sechrist is a Republican, represented Pottawatomie County in the Iowa House of Representatives for, and correct me on this if I'm wrong, Brent, but I think it's 18 years?
Yes, sir.
And 10 years of that as Speaker of the House from 1992 to 2002.
That seven of those years were majority leader and then 3 years as Speaker, but 10 years in leadership.
Okay. All right. So it's 7 years as a majority leader and then the remainder of that 10 as Speaker of the House.
If I had been Speaker for 10 years, I wouldn't be here today. I'd be dead, I'm sure.
Well, that leads us into what we want to talk about. That is comparisons between now and then. And are you saying the duration would have done you in, or have that things changed that much?
Well, I think they have changed somewhat substantially, but it's a national trend. I don't think it's just in Iowa. There's much more partisanship in the legislature now than there was during my time, and I'm certainly sure the same is true for Bill. There's still 150 well-meaning people up there. Even when you disagree with them, they're there to do the job they think they're sent to do. But it is more divided and more ideologically rigid than when I was there, and I think that takes a toll.
Was that change evolutionary? Did you see the shift happening, or has that been an abrupt shift over the past 4, 8, 10 years beyond the time that you were there?
Well, I think it is more evolutionary, although it wasn't very prevalent when I was still there. I think we got along pretty well. But over the last 10 to 12 years, you could just see it. Part of it's, I think, the 24/7 news cycle and people getting more entrenched in their positions. But it wasn't as abrupt, I don't think. No, it's been kind of gradual, and you've seen it at the national level.
I want to go back to that news cycle, but I want to bring Bill Gluba here into the conversation. He represented the other extreme side of the state. Now, maybe when I say extreme, I don't mean political party. Yes, one Democrat, one Republican. Bill Gluba is a Democrat. But from the eastern side of the state. Now, you've heard what Brent Sechrist said, and now he came well after your terms in the 1970s, Bill. But was partisanship evolutionary? You were shaking your head yes, as he was saying. You're here in the Iowa City studio with me, and so I can see you shaking your head in agreement with Brent Sechrist. But what about the partisanship that he says is much more rigid now?
Well, first of all, Brent was an outstanding legislator, and I was talking to Jim Lycum, who served with Brent Sechrist, and he said Brent was the kind of guy you could go to, talk to, and work with. So I think that's changed a lot. Today, they tell me you really can't work with the Republicans. They're so partisan or narrow-focused that you just can't work with them, and the bipartisanship is broken down to a big degree. Now, I think it goes back probably to Roger Ailes. People remember he was a political operative and strategist.
Not from Iowa.
Not from Iowa, national figure. That basically he, along with Rupert Murdoch, took over, started Fox News and the local news outlets, this little conservative talk radio. And I think that's had a great influence because it used to be in Iowa when I served in the legislature, Bob Rae was governor. Bob Rae was a moderate Republican. There aren't many moderate Republicans like Bob Rae. And you could work with him. And Maggie Tinsman, moderate. Art New, moderate. Today, they're so narrow-focused and partisan that it just doesn't work like it used to.
I'm wondering if you're saying Republicans are very partisan, but I wonder if it might be the same on the other side, that the left has moved further to the left.
I think there's some of that. I think the Democrats are pretty much too much controlled by AFSCME, the Teachers Association, AFSCME, or Iowa State Education Association, AFSCME, very narrow focused. I had to battle with them, AFSCME when I was mayor. They wanted to have an extra person on every fire truck, which would have cost us millions of dollars. And so, yes, there's some, but it's deeper than that. It's the amount of money in politics today. Used to run when we were in the legislature, you could get elected state senate with $3,500, $2,500 for state house. You could raise that through a few simple little fundraisers. Today, my gosh, some of them are $1 million, hundreds of thousands of dollars ever since Citizens United. So these, too many of them are bought and sold before they get there. They're good people, but their vote, you know, it's too expensive or too partisan, and they're there too long.
We're going to be bringing, as we go along in this hour, other voices into the conversation. We're going to have other former legislators in the second half hour, but even right now, you who are listening can get involved in the conversation by calling us at 866-780-9100 or river to river at iowapublicradio.org if you want to type in a message. And then also, Joyce Russell is at the State House, and she's in the law library there. She is our Iowa Public Radio correspondent day in and day out at the Iowa legislature. She's covered many years in the legislature, so she's seen what maybe she would call also the evolutionary change. But Joyce, I want to get you involved as well, so just feel free to break in, and hello, and glad to have you along.
Okay, thanks a lot, Dean.
All right. Let's go back to Brent Segrist. Brent, you heard what Bill Gluba said about the 24/7 news cycle. Do you blame that for what's going on in Iowa?
Well, I think it's part of it. Yeah, I think you are recruiting candidates now on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, that they're kind of steeped in everything they hear on, be it Fox News or MSNBC or whatever. And I think they've got some more. I guess I'd do it this way, is that a lot of people go to legislature now and they see everything in black and white. And the legislative process is a lot of gray in there. I mean, you can be black and white on issues like the death penalty or abortion or something like that, but the majority of issues before the legislature require some compromise, some give and take. And I just think people, because of the constant onslaught of the 24/7 news, are a little bit too much black and white. And also, I would add, and Bill mentioned the amount of money that's in campaigns today. Eventually, that's going to scare good people out of the process because it is reaching some ridiculous levels of financing.
Well, has it already? Bill Gluba, what do you think about scaring people out of the process? Now, what was the composition of the legislature when you served?
Well, when I was there, for example, I think the status or the educational level, both practical and experiments-wise, has changed a lot. The quality and caliber of the legislators. For example, in Eisen State Senate, we had 13 lawyers. You had people like Art New, liberal progressive. Art New is a moderate. Gene Glynn from Ottumwa. Ralph McCartney, a lawyer.
Charles City.
There was Tom Riley from Cedar Rapids, Phil Hill from Des Moines, John Murray from Ames, Bart Schwager from Waterloo, James DeCoster from Hull, Kevin Kelly from Sioux City. There were a lot of moderate Republican lawyers and Democrat, 13 of them, and they were bright people, very smart, competent individuals. I don't think you have that caliber today, and they actually practiced law. They had to go back and work on the weekends. The legislators had to go back. They didn't depend on legislature as a full-time job.
Joyce,
and I think that makes a difference.
Joyce, I'm going to bring you into the conversation here. You know the composition. You see them day in and day out. You heard what Bill Gluba just said about attorneys serving in the legislature and other professionals.
Well, I think there are not very many attorneys in the Iowa Senate. I agree with that. A good number in the Iowa House, and I don't know about their training. I think if any of them are listening right now, they might be a little offended by what Mr. Gluba is saying. Attorneys certainly do provide a very valuable input, whether they're in the minority or the majority. And I will say that this year and the last couple of years in the Iowa House, I think that the attorneys who are in the Democratic minority have played a very critical role in sentencing reform and a number of other issues where they really knew the nuts and bolts and the guts of Iowa law. So I will agree that competent attorneys play a critical role in the legislature.
Brent, feel free to break in on this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't as many lawyers. I agree with that. But I'm at the Capitol relatively frequently in my position of executive director for the area education agencies. And I find the people up there, while they may be a lot more conservative and in some cases a lot more liberal than they used to be, I do find them to all be very, you know, fairly well-versed and competent professional people. So I understand what Bill's saying. I don't necessarily disagree with that. The composition has changed, but it's still made up of people that are intelligent, and they just, I think, have just more rigid views on different issues, which they're not always willing to compromise when perhaps that would be in the best interest of the state.
And that's right.
I would also add that last year, I don't know if this was the first time, but it kind of got people's attention when Senator Steve Sauters chaired the Judiciary Committee in the Iowa Senate, and he was not a lawyer, and that kind of got people's attention.
Well, and Brent's right. For example, back in 1971, we passed collective bargaining for public employees. There were 37 Democrats in the House and 13 Republicans, or the rest were Republicans, 63. We had to get 13 Republican members to vote for that. We were in the minority. We passed that. The person that handled it was a lawyer from Clinton who did a very outstanding job. Today, you could not pass collective bargaining. That's how much it changed. Matter of fact, they dismantled it, essentially. There's the criminal code. We rewrote the Iowa criminal code. It was the most voluminous piece of legislation. It took 4 years. It had the best people on both sides talking, discussing, and passing very controversial items. I don't think the caliber is there. They haven't done as much work. They only work from – they go home on Thursday. We used to go in on Sunday night and come back on Friday. Anyway, there's a lot more to it, and there's a lot of reasons I don't think they're as efficient or effective as they used to be.
I appreciate that perspective. We're going to bring Dennis in from Polk City, who's calling in. We're going to bring him on into the conversation in just a moment. But, Brent, you just heard what Mayor Gluba, Senator Gluba, said about the work week. I'd like your comments on that, because you were in leadership. You kind of set the schedule.
Yeah, we did. And actually, I understand what Bill's saying. I wouldn't disagree. However, when the Republicans took control in the House after the 92 election, we tried to be a little more efficient. Now that I got out in 2002, so that may have faded. But we were the ones who did go to the not working on Friday, but we were pretty in tune to working harder during the week. And so we always thought that we accomplished our duties in the time frame. It's how efficiently and how closely you work to get the things done. If you can do it in 4 days instead of five and let people go back home to their families, we thought that was something that was good for everybody involved.
Well, is that what you were trying to do in shortening the work week, just let people get back to their families? Or was it to get back either to professions or was it to get back to constituents?
All three. And it also, and it worked for both parties, it was to help recruit good candidates. If you had somebody who was a lawyer, for example, or a teacher, or whoever it may be, if they knew they could at least have 3 days at home, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, generally speaking, they might be more willing to run. So it was all those things, the families and their professions, as well as enticing them to come to the legislature and provide their services.
Dennis from Polk City, you've called in. Your question, your comment?
Well, I have to agree totally that the partisanship has started immediately after the big money came into the field. And I've noticed that the large corporate donors tend to stray towards the Republican candidates. I don't say they don't always feed the Democratic candidates, but they tend to stray towards the Republican candidates. And the Republican candidates that do get elected, and there's many of them in Iowa, all three branches of government are controlled, seem to be only concerned about corporate interests, which are their donors.
Dennis, what is your point?
Well, what I want to point out is that basically our elected officials are supposed to represent the people. It just seems to me like they're just representing the financial interests of the companies in the state.
All right, I think we have it. And Brent, I've got to ask you about that.
Well, I mean, certainly money does have some influence in the elections in every state, I'm sure. So I understand what he's saying. But again, corporations or unions, teachers' unions, or ask me whatever, they give to people who generally are thinking in the same vein that they are. So everybody has some influence. And in the end, you hope you're electing people that take that all into consideration and then vote to do the right thing. Certainly that doesn't always happen, but there's no doubt that money has influence in the elections, and that's on both sides of the aisle. And in this case, where you have the Republicans with the all three-legged stools, the focus is going to be more on the corporate interest. Over whatever 7-8 years ago, when the Democrats with Governor Culver had the House and Senate, there were certainly people screaming about the influence of unions. So those that does enter into it. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and I think, Brent, it's deeper than that. I can remember, again, when Bob Rae was governor, the Des Moines Register, for example, was a newspaper back then all Iowa depended upon. Today, it's not effective in promoting or changing public policy. When I could almost read the Des Moines Register editorials and figure out where Bob Rae's head was going to be on any given issue, because they were generally progressive, moderate at best, and you could key off them. Today, the Register isn't even, and I couldn't find it in Davenport. Nothing wrong with the Register. It's a great newspaper. But it used to be, it was the paper that a lot of legislators and the climate sort of keyed off of. And that's not the existence today. Today, it's Rush Limbaugh. It's the talking heads that have the influences and the smaller radio stations with their little, talk radio programs that are pretty much slanted to the right. That has a great impact. And I think it goes back, and I'm into this, with when Grover Norquist and the Republican strategist back with Roger Ailes decided to do this, Norquist refers to government as the beast. And a lot of Republicans believe that the government evil, essentially, and that's why the reason they don't cooperate as much as they used to.
Bill, I'm going to ask Bill Gluba here, who just spoke, and then go back to you, Brent. But the question being, are voters helpless in this? That is, what can voters and constituents do to help push lawmakers back toward the middle?
Well, they need to participate more in active politics. 93 million American voters didn't vote last time. 93 million, almost one out of four, one out of five. They need to get involved. They need to watch. But they just can't listen. They need to listen to public radio occasionally, maybe more than they do, and public television, where you may get both sides. You don't get both sides on these radio talk shows. You're getting propaganda day in and day out. Rush Limbaugh dripping on these people now. So they got to educate themselves. They got to think more. They got to elect people who are that are citizen legislators. I think we've strayed away from citizen legislators. Some have been there 50 years. They need term limits. Get in and get out. Make your contribution that you want to make as a citizen legislator, and then leave.
Brent?
Yeah, I don't disagree with what Bill said. It's about participation. Although, I think you have to look at both sides on that. If you're worried about, Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, and I have trouble listening to Hannity anymore, people on the Republican side would say the same thing about Rachel Maddow. It's a pox on both parties, if you will, in that manner. But being involved in campaigns is extremely important. I can tell you that when I was Speaker, I raised a lot of money, not as much as they raise now, but a lot of money. But I always remembered, I could get a big check from a corporation or something, some big PAC, but I still remember a guy that gave me $10 every time I ran. Driver education teacher at Abraham Lincoln High School. I always remembered that. So if local people get involved locally, the legislators still do listen to them. For legislators, if they get five or six calls from their home district generally that's something that gets their attention. Not always, I understand that, but it's about participation and being involved, going to your meetings on Saturday when legislators are in town where they're accessible, and trying to flex your muscle as a voter in that district. And if you disagree with somebody, work to defeat them.
Brent, I've got more questions and issues here than we have time, but I'm kind of going to the top of my list here. I want to ask, would you be more fearful about your personal security if you had a desk at the State House today as compared when you were serving?
You know, maybe a little, but not much. You know, again, I'm at the Capitol frequently, and, you know, people are a little more rambunctious these days. But I still think, and I hope I'm right on this, we're still in Iowa. So if any, it would be a little. But there were some times even back then, particularly with the hog lot legislation early on, where it got pretty rowdy, too. So the answer is a little, but not much.
Well, let's just hope something doesn't happen. I thought it was insane, irresponsible for the legislature to follow what the NRA wanted and allow guns into the state capitol. That could come back to haunt them. You know, where do you draw the line? You know, somebody brings an automatic pistol and starts shooting. People, that's just not sensible. Years ago, back in the 1880s, they outlawed. They said you couldn't take guns into the legislature and into the city council chambers, et cetera. I think they're just asking for trouble. That was a big mistake. It's sad, but it indicates, again, the influence of the NRA.
Brent, I want to go back to you just because I'm trying to cram in as much as I can here before we break for the news, and that is you said you're at the State House quite frequently now. There are lots of demonstrations up at the State House. Are there more now, in your perception, than there used to be? And, in fact, sometimes the gallery in the House of Representatives is shut off during the condition of the state address and so on. That isn't open to the general public anymore. Are these demonstrations more frequent, and are they effective in any way?
I think they're probably a little more frequent, Dean, but, I mean, again, we had them fairly frequently back when I was in the legislature. So as to their effectiveness, a little bit, but again, most legislators are going to be listening to people back home, and so they will know those demonstrations are there. They will know what they're about. So it does have some impact, but in a lot of ways, you know, they're making their decisions based on some other issues, be it people at home, perhaps what the party wants you to do. So a little more frequent, but not always effective.
Thank you, Bill Gluba and Brent Sechrist. You hear that music in the background. That means we're going to take a short break now for about 5 minutes of news, and then we'll be back with other former legislators and along with our State House correspondent, Joyce Russell, in the next half hour. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio. Dean Borg continuing River to River on Iowa Public Radio this Monday noon. And today we're testing that theory that you can learn a lot from those who have experience. And we're talking with people who've had vast experience in the Iowa legislature. In the last half hour, you were listening and heard Bill Gluba, who served in the House of Representatives and the Senate, former mayor of Davenport, Brent Sechrist, who had leadership roles for a number of years in the Iowa House of Representatives. And now we're bringing in this hour Johnny Hammond, who is a Democrat from Ames, served 20 years representing Story County in the Iowa House and Senate from 1982 up to 2002. Representative Handis, Senator Hammond, welcome to Iowa Public Radio.
I'm glad to be here today and joining old friends.
Oh, good. It's good to hear that because we have a bipartisan program today, and I'm glad to hear you say that. Jean Lloyd-Jones is an Iowa City Democrat. She's in our Iowa City studio, serving 16 years representing Johnson County in the Iowa House and Senate from 1979 to 1994. Senator Jones, welcome.
Thank you very much, and hello, Johnny. Good to be with you.
Hello, Jean.
Maggie Tinsman is a Republican, serving 18 years representing Scott County in the Iowa Senate from 1989 to 2007. She also served 11 years as Scott County Supervisor before being elected to the State Senate. And now you may recognize her name as co-chairing the gender balance organization called 50-50 by 2020. Senator Tinsman, welcome.
Nice to be with you and also with Johnny and Jane.
Secretary Simpson, you have just spoken here, so the leaders and listeners recognize your voice. And you sat in and listened as our two former legislators talked during the first half hour. One of the things they said there was the influence of the media. There was somewhat of a disagreement, but I want you to comment on that. And then evolving into the other thing that arose there, and that is the difference in the professions represented in the Iowa legislature. And before you begin, I also want to welcome in again Joyce Russell, who's our State House correspondent. She's in Des Moines at the State House right now and a part of our program today. And Joyce, I want you to break in whenever you can. Okay, Senator Tinsman, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I think there is a giant influence in the media, but the media calling...
Good or bad?
Not always equal. So sometimes it's very one-sided. And when I talk about media now I'm talking about social media as well as radio programs like this. It's very bipartisan, which is very nice to hear. And some of the commentators on newspapers try to do that. Some of the TV stations that both Mayor Gluba and Brent Seacrest mentioned, yeah, they're very, very partisan. I actually don't listen to either one of them because of that. But I was shocked being up at the Capitol last week, and I was going to a Senate education meeting, and I went, and everyone was kind of out in the hall because just the Democrats were caucusing from the Senate committee in the Senate room, and they don't discuss anymore. They caucus ahead of time before they even have the committee meeting, and then they just come out with a total
In other words,
position.
What you're saying, the party gets their members together before you even go into a committee meeting to have a discussion. But
that's,
you're saying
that's right, and
the boundaries are set before you even get to a meeting.
That's right, and that's okay. Very different.
Senator Hammond, I want you to weigh in on the questions that I've just asked there.
Well, I am very pained by what is happening today, that you have to vote with your party. I didn't always vote with my party, although I generally agreed with it philosophically. There were times I was the lone no vote or yes vote, whichever. And that just does not happen anymore. And clearly what Maggie is describing is Democrats are all they're all expected to vote together. I don't know. I never see it anything written about it that there are courageous people who say, no, I'm not going to do what you're telling me to do, either in committee or on the floor. That's a shame. I want my elected representative and elected senator to think for themselves after consulting with their own constituents.
Well, let's ask an impartial observer, Joyce Russell, is our State House correspondent. She covers these committee meetings. She covers the debate. Joyce, you've heard the discussion here, and you've heard what Senator Tinsman said, that the battle lines are already set and decided there's no discussion anymore in the formal meetings.
Well, there's definitely a difference, as our guests are pointing out. When I first started covering the legislature, you would go to a committee meeting, would sit down, everybody would, they'd take the roll, and then they'd hash out the bill. Now, without fail, unless it is the least controversial bill, they call everybody in, then they send everybody out and say the two parties are going to caucus. And that's a relatively recent thing and a big change from years back.
And Joyce, one more follow-up question. Why has that, what caused that?
Well, I think it's just a symptom of more partisanship at the legislature. Both parties want to get their ducks in a row and be on the same page as a caucus. And I think it goes along with some of the things we've been talking about a more divisive atmosphere at the legislature.
Former Senator Gene Lloyd-Jones of Iowa City, a Democrat, you've heard what was just been said here, but a little bit broader than that. Just your own personal experience, how did you determine when it was best to compromise, even though you may not fully agree with the other side?
Well, Dean, I share the dismay that's already been expressed about the extreme partisanship. Things have been are so much different now than they were when I was there. Maggie and I were up at the Capitol a couple weeks ago for Pioneer Law Days, and I think we both heard from our respective party people that the other side was being absolutely impossible. They wouldn't listen. They wouldn't let us talk to them. It's just the atmosphere seemed to be almost toxic.
And what has created the toxicity?
And I think it is the I think it is that there are more social issues that have become ideological, and people have these are deeply held principles.
Are you avoiding saying the word abortion?
Abortion is one of them. Gay rights is another one. The control of women's the control of women, you know, is very alarming, and you just feel like we're being pushed back into the last century almost by some of the measures that are being taken. Maggie and I co-chair 50-50 in 2020, and one of our goals is to elect more women to the legislature. And the reason is that we think that the infusion of more females will temper the conversation. Studies have shown that when you get enough women into the group, the conversation becomes more civil, the results are more practical, more points of view are considered, and so that's why we are so passionate about doing that.
Well, you wouldn't be at all biased, would you? I know I'm a male voice, but you wouldn't be at all biased, would you, in that?
Dean, we're not saying we want women to take over. If we had 80% women and 20% men, we would be just as passionate about getting more men into the conversation.
I suppose I'm ill-advised to call in Joyce Russell on this, but Joyce, do you
actually
notice the composition? Does that make a difference?
And Dean, you're going to have at least 3, maybe 4 women on the other side.
I'll get to you in just a minute, Senator.
And Dean, 53% of the voters are female, and we're not even trying to be the majority. Remember, that's what democracy is about.
I'm going to go to Joyce Russell first of all for her comment and then go to Senator Hammond.
Well, I want to push back a little bit with what Senator Jean Lloyd-Jones is saying about if we had more women, it would be a nudge in the direction of less partisanship. Because I can recall, I'm not going to be able to put an exact time on it, but I know there was a time in the Iowa House not too long ago when they tried to have a women's caucus in the House, and the Democratic and Republican women just found that they could not sit down at the table together. And that was actually a few years back before things had gotten so partisan.
You mean
so,
they couldn't sit down at the table because they were too partisan?
Well, they found that they had more things that divided them as Democrats and Republicans than united them as women. And so I guess I would just throw a little cold water on what Senator Lloyd-Jones is saying.
I'm going to go to Senator Hammond, and then we're going to bring in Doug, who's calling in from Des Moines. Senator Hammond, go ahead.
Yes, well, all three of us that are here today participated in those legislative caucuses for women.
Absolutely.
And we did that for a number of years. And I track back the breakup of that to the intense feelings about abortion. I don't know if Maggie and Jean would agree with that.
I'd agree.
Yes.
But when I first became a legislator back in 1983, the legislative caucus was meeting, the women's caucus, and there were, I think, 15 women in that, and 14 of them were pro-choice. Oh. And so as that has changed, the whole thing deteriorated, and we tried to really push for legislation that women would support, like more child care and better inheritance rights for farm women. Mm-hmm. So the issues we covered should not have been partisan. the abortion issue was.
I promised I'd bring in Doug from Des Moines. Doug,
okay.
You say that you served as a lobbyist during the times that our guests today were in the legislature.
Yes, I did. Thanks, Dean, for taking my call. It's been many, many years ago. But since that time, I've continued to follow politics closely because anyone who wants to know the cause and effect, follow the money. And it may not have been to that degree. And we're talking back, Senator Lloyd Jones, I remember working with you, Representative Segrist, if he's still on the line, as well as Mr. Gluba from Davenport. But the money, or the infusion of money, has caused, it's wreaked a lot of havoc on a state and federal level. And when people always ask, you know, where did this start or what caused the problem? And a lot of good things we can do with proper funding, but follow the money.
All right.
And many of the issues you brought up today, Medicaid, why in the world did we make that switch? I guess we'd have to address Governor Branstad and ask him that question. The bill that was signed a week ago, allowing guns in the Capitol and elsewhere. I heard Representative Segrist's comments. Does anybody remember 10 years ago the Virginia Tech shootings? I could go on and on, but I won't, Dean, and I appreciate you listening, the listeners, as well as your guests.
But, Doug, I'm going to give you just 15 more seconds to sum up your point there. That is, what point would you say, how would you summarize your thoughts?
When times have gotten bad, some people, and pardon the my language, when times get bad, some people get bad or badder, and I know that's not proper language, but I hope everyone can get the point. We're at a time now where we have no middle class, and people are desperate.
All right. Thank Doug.
My health insurance has quadrupled in 2 years, my cost monthly.
And people are pressed and have strong feelings. I get your point, Doug, and thank you very much for calling in from Des Moines. Joyce?
Well, I have a question for our guests. As I look at your bios, each of you would have been in the legislature in the early 90s when ethics reform was passed, and this would have been well before the sort of partisan shift in the legislature that we're talking about. But when that happened, it cracked down on lobbyists, essentially lobbyists taking lawmakers out to dinner. It put a cap on how much you could spend for a gift or a meal or a snack or whatever for a lawmaker. And at that time, people made the comment that changed the sort of camaraderie of the legislature, that there were more people going home instead of going out to eat. Obviously, the point of that ethics law, very good, and you should not have to be able to buy a vote with your dinner. But I wonder if any of you remember that and remember that as a time when, for sort of different reasons, the atmosphere changed down here.
Senator Hammett, I'm going to have you first of all, then we're going to hear from Senator Tinsman.
Well, yes, it was John Connors that felt very strongly about that, Joyce, as you may remember, that stopped the camaraderie. There's another side to that camaraderie, and that is whether there's a lobbyist paying for it or the legislators pay it for themselves. One of the outcomes of that camaraderie was that the man went out for a beer after adjournment for the day. The women went home to prepare their meals at their apartments. And so the men, and it was mostly men, there may have been some women there, but the men decided the agenda, and the women were left behind. I think that was a consequence of that kind of camaraderie.
I want to tell you, you're getting a nod here from Senator Tinsman.
Yep.
Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, Senator Hammond.
What's the effect of that? I mean, what's the point she's trying to make?
First of all, I thought going down to, what, $3, lobbyists couldn't spend more than $3 or something. I said, you know, I can't be bought for a $10 meal either, or even a $20 meal. I can't be bought. But the whole thing was you went out to dinner not only with the lobbyists but with other say, House members. You didn't even know what the House was doing except through these people. And then you started understanding what they were doing, what legislation they were doing, and why they felt about whatever they felt. And it was a good way to talk to one another. So I thought it wasn't a bad thing when we got together. I did think that it looked like, oh, you're being bought if you go out to dinner with a lobbyist. I didn't see it that way. I felt I was getting more information, and I didn't necessarily agree with that lobbyist.
Well, just what needs to change then?
Well, first of all, I think I'd get rid of that $3 thing. I'd let lobbyists take out people. But I guess they do have receptions now, where larger receptions where both the House and the Senate are together, and so you can talk to one another as well as talk to the people who are having the reception.
Senator Lloyd-Jones, I want to ask, you have a comment on that?
I do. I came into the legislature having served on an ethics committee that Governor Ray appointed, and that committee was made up of very knowledgeable and experienced, mostly men. I was, I think, the only woman. And I remember one of them, who was a former legislator, saying, you know, some people can't be bought for $1 million. Some can be bought for a pair of cufflinks. And the recommendation of that committee, and we drafted a bill that I later introduced when I got in the legislature, saying that there would be no gifts. Absolutely zero gifts. And I still think that is a good idea. But I think the accommodation that has now been made, saying if you give something to every legislator, not just take a few out to dinner, but everybody is there.
What's the point of a gift anyway? What good is that to helping a legislator decide? Yeah, I can see a conference with a lobbyist over dinner as being helpful because information is exchanged. But what's the value in passing legislation to getting a pin for a woman or cufflinks for a man?
What is the value?
Yeah, it seems to me like gifts should be outlawed.
Well, yeah, that's
okay,
what I'm saying.
I get it. Okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
I'm going to go on to another question, though, Senator Jean Lloyd-Jones. Are we, because of where we are right now in the extremes on both sides, Republican, conservative, very liberal wing in the Democratic Party, are we getting more pendulum shifts in our legislation?
Definitely.
Go ahead.
Definitely. And I think our experience, the people on this panel, has been that the best legislation is that which is passed in a bipartisan way.
Right.
Because if it's not, then the next time the other party gets in power, they repeal or, you know, change. And I don't know what the answer is. The voters, of course, elect these people to their positions in the legislature. They are influenced by the media, by the money, by all these extreme influences that they have. So,
Senator Hammond, if you were seeking election now, what would be your central issue or what would be the theme of your appeal to voters if you were seeking election now?
Well, I wouldn't be seeking, first of all. But if I were, I think I would want to push for work on civility, on bipartisan communication, and particularly on constraints on finance.
You're getting nods here across the table where I'm in the Iowa City studio, and Maggie Tinsman is shaking her head most vigorously.
I absolutely agree.
But how would you accomplish that? How do you have legislation on civility?
Well, first of all, you have more women because women.
Now you've got me nodding, Maggie.
Women have a tendency to be more civil. Now, I'm not saying men aren't civil. I actually love men. So, I mean, but women, when they give their opinions, they don't have quite as big an ego And so it is a little lower than the men.
Unfortunately, we have to leave it there, and the woman has the final say. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Ben Statton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Thanks to our guests today who have been here in the Iowa City studio, Johnny Hammonds in Ames, Gene Lloyd-Jones in Iowa City, and Maggie Tinsman with me here. This is River to River, and it's a production of Iowa Public Radio News.